Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, December 4th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Byrne. It's good to have you with us, as always. On today's show, we'll talk with Reggie Schapp about upcoming Juno Jazz and Classics events. Harrison B. will preview his acoustic holiday concert on Wednesday. Deputy Chief David Campbell will give us an update on JPD activities. And Megan Chambers and Ben Brown will preview Friday's Naughty or Nice wine tasting at the Jack. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 40 degrees here in the capital city with mostly cloudy skies.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, Pebble Mine has been in the works for years. It's faced resistance from tribes, fishermen, local governments, and environmentalists. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued a proposed determination that the mine was too risky to go forward. But after President Trump took office, the EPA settled with Pebble to withdraw its proposal, possibly making it easier for the mining company to get permits. Today, we begin the series, Alaska Water Wars, taking a look at Alaska Native people and resource development. Daisha Eaton reports.
Surrounded by windswept tundra, lakes, and streams that flow into tributaries leading to Bristol Bay, Pebble Limited Partnership spokesperson Mike Heatwool explains how the state-owned land would change if the copper and gold deposit is developed.
We're standing on what we call the overlook.
So this hill, this high point that we're standing on, this would actually be where the open pit would be?
That's one possibility.
While initial plans by the Pebble Partnership, owned by Canadian mining company Northern Dynasty, have been pared down, if permitted and built, Pebble would be nearly 13 square miles.
It's roughly about half of what had been talked about before, and this would be a 20-year mine life for the project.
The company also no longer plans to use cyanide to get the last bits of gold out. Alana Hurley leads United Tribes of Bristol Bay, a group formed to fight the project. Hurley is Yupik and lives in Dillingham, about 100 miles southwest of the mine site. She's also a commercial fisherman.
Bristol Bay is the last place on earth that salmon thrive. We should care about that as a society.
Nearly half of the world's salmon return to spawn in rivers and streams that flow into Bristol Bay. Those waters support a $1.5 billion commercial fishery. Indigenous Alaskans have fished there for millennia and still do. That's part of the reason the EPA under President Barack Obama in 2014 proposed setting limits on what a mine could do and how big it could be. That's what the EPA could now overturn. Matt Newman, an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund, says the potential for damage to valuable waterways remains high.
You're going to affect water flow. You're going to affect water temperature. You're going to affect turbidity.
Many tribes worry if the mine is developed, it could operate longer than 20 years and grow much larger, triggering development of more mines. I'm Daisha Eaton.
Tribes say the Amber Alert system is needed on reservations, including in Arizona, as KAWC's Stephanie Sanchez reports.
The U.S. Senate passed the Amber Alert in Indian Country Act of 2017. The bill, co-sponsored by Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona and Democrat Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, would make Indian tribes eligible for Department of Justice grants that help assemble Amber Alert systems for law enforcement agencies. The Kokopah Tribe's Chief of Police, Joe Jenkins, says they currently use the Integrated Public Alert System for emergency situations like Amber Alerts, but look forward to this initiative.
Any equipment and funding we can receive to assist us in the effort is certainly appreciated. I'm certainly grateful that Washington, D.C. and the folks there have recognized the needs in the tribal communities, not only ours, but of course throughout the country.
According to the Federal Bureau of Investigations, more than 7,500 Native American children are listed as missing in the United States today. Last year, in a high-profile abduction on the Navajo Nation in northern Arizona, authorities did not issue an Amber Alert for 11-year-old Ashlyn Mike until the day after family members reported her abduction. The new bill would require the DOJ to assess Amber Alert capabilities on Native American reservations and guarantee oversight and training for tribes. In Yuma, I'm Stephanie Sanchez.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, December 4th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. In the studio now is Vicki Van Fleet and also Reggie Schapp. We're here to talk about all things Juno jazz and classics. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. It seems, Reggie, like maybe the next event is swinging in the new year.
It's swinging in the new year.
Is it already that time?
It's already that time. Can you believe it? Before you know it, it's going to be 2018.
All right. So New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve at the Jack. We're going to have a little bit different this year. We're going to have two bands. We're going to have the Juno Big Band playing first, and then Gambit and the High Cost of Living will be playing after that, bringing in the new year.
Awesome. Vicki, not only do you sing in the big band, but you're also president of the board of the Juno Jazz and Classics, right?
Yep. I took over for Kathy Ruddy when she kind of retired from the board. And so Reggie and I have been working pretty steadily and every week trying to, you know, it was a big transition when Linda retired and having a new executive director and artistic director, and then Kathy was leaving too. So, you know, we've had some challenges, but we're having a good time.
Okay. Remind us what time the whole thing starts, Reggie?
Well, the free dance lessons are from 8 to 9, and then the dance party itself will start at 9 o'clock at the Jack.
Okay. And the big band, about what time, Vicki?
The big band will start at 9. It'll play from 9 until 11. And we're actually going to have two separate stages, so there won't be a lot of equipment moving. We won't have like a 20-minute downtime. We might have maybe a 10-minute intermission, and then Gamble and the High Cost of Living will be on the next stage, and they'll start shortly after 11 and ring in the new year.
What a fun night. As a singer for the big band, what can we expect?
Well, you know, Juno Big Band, it was Ron Moss's Thunder Mountain Big Band for many years, and before that it was Mel Flood's Big Band. That's when I started. And basically, with the Big Band, you can hear music that runs the gamut between, you know, from the 1930s all the way into the 70s. And so you get to hear, that night, New Year's Eve itself, you're going to get to hear a lot of different musical genre. So it should be a lot of fun, a lot of different dancing going on, and we're hoping it's going to be a great party.
That's right. Okay, and then Costa Gamble and the High Cost of Living, about what time do you think they'll fire up?
Probably 10 past 11. I mean, I don't think that there's going to be much of an intermission. Like I said, we were looking at possibly like a half hour stage change, and then we were like, that's a long time. Can't we get two stages? And so we had the people at the Jack figure it out, do the measurements. And
amazing, Rachel.
Yeah, so we've got two stages, and they'll be ready to go. So shouldn't be much of an intermission at all.
And this is a post-dinner event, right?
Right. There are going to be some appetizers and desserts, as well as a wine and wine and beer bar. So there'll be stuff to drink, and there'll be a free champagne toast at midnight, and it's just a lot of fun. And everyone who comes to this event is going to be the first people to get a chance to buy tickets for our festival in 2018, in May of 2018.
And you said you have your schedule pretty much down.
It's pretty much down, and this year is going to be a little bit different for the cruises, and I know they are so popular out there. We're just going to have one blues cruise at 7 p.m., and in the afternoon at 12 o'clock, we're going to have a classical cruise this year. So there's still two cruises, but there's only going to be one blues cruise. So those tickets will probably be gone by March or April really early. So you guys are
people who come to swing in the new year will get the first chance to buy the tickets.
All right, so that's the festival in May, but you have some stuff going on before that, right?
We do. In January, our artistic director, William Ransom, is coming back with Julie Coucheron. If you were there in May, they played a fantastic four-handed piano pieces. They're coming back to do that, and the event's called Martini and Mozart, and that will be on January 14th. But we're also going to do some outreach for the kids this time. On January 13th, out at Egan Library, kids can come in their pajamas, bring their stuffed animals and blankets, and we're going to do musical bedtime stories. It's a free family concert. All you have to do is show up, be comfy, and listen to some wonderful music that Will and Julie will be playing.
Okay. What else is on the festival radar? Vicki, what's the board thinking about right now?
Well, we really have the contracts inked. The festival, it's going to start out with Junior Boyd Jones.
Andrew Boyd Jr. Jones Band.
Yes. And he's out of Texas, I believe.
He's fabulous. If you watch him on the internet, the links will be up here soon. We're hoping to have him up this week. And he is amazing. He and his wife, Carrie, do the band, and it's like you watch them, and it's like they're going to bring the house down.
Yeah.
It's going to be fabulous.
Yeah, it's going to be a really strong start to the festival.
And they're going to be the ones on the Blues Cruise. So you are not going to want to miss the Blues Cruise. You want to get your tickets early.
Yeah, we have really an exciting lineup for 2018, and it came together. It just kind of all came together and so quickly that normally, I don't think by this time of year, the year before, we already have everything sealed and ready to go. So it's going to be fun. Can I say who the finale is?
You can say who the finale is.
Okay, so we have for the festival finale, we have Rhonda Ross, who is Diana Ross's daughter and a pretty well-known musician in her own right. She just got off of a European tour, and she's been to Alaska once before and loved it. So she's coming back. Her husband, I'm trying to think of his name, and I'm not going to...
Kendrick. His last name is Kendrick.
Kendrick, yeah. But he was, for all you funk people out there, he was the pianist for George Clinton, who was kind of the godfather of funk. So he always travels with her. He's her pianist. And then we're going to have some people from jazz and classics, the festival, who are going to be like her drummer and bassist.
And we're going to do some local people in there for saxophone and different things and some vocal backups.
Yeah.
So it will be really fun. It's going to be quite a mix that final night. It should be just a wonderful party.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
All right. In the meantime, another phenomenal party, right? New Year's Eve.
Yes. Tickets are on sale right now at jazzandclassics.org, at the Jack, and at Hearthside Books. And the price is $35 for general admission. You aren't guaranteed a seat, but if you're dancing a lot, that's just fine. If you want a reserved seat that you're ready to go, they're $45.
Okay. And again, find you on Facebook or the web?
Find us, jazzandclassics.org.
All right. Thank you so much, Reggie and Vicki, for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just remember on your calendar, June 29th, Arlo Guthrie.
All right. And here to take us out is Gamble and the High Cost of Living from their January of this year, their Karen and Spotlight concert at the Jack.
All right.
Rock steady now. Rock steady, baby. Rock steady now. Lentfer, author and lifelong Alaskan, helped establish a 4,000-acre refuge for sandhill cranes. Every fall and spring, the cranes stop at the Gustavus Forelands Preserve to rest and refuel. Many are migrating between the Arctic and the rice fields of California. Today, some 20,000 sandhill cranes use the preserve. Along the way, they've helped Hank make his own journey, one from despair to hope. Here's Hank.
I live in what feels to me the center of paradise. But when efforts were ramping up to send oil rigs into the Arctic refuge, I got pried out of my little refuge.
Hank petitioned Washington, joined his local town council, and became a voice for a tax on carbon.
I went because that was the continuing effort to turn public lands into private profit. So I felt compelled to join that particular effort, but it was really part of a wider effort in saying, stop, there has to be a limit. And it's easy in the avalanche of grim news to feel isolated and to feel alone in our sadness. It's the act of joining other people in the name of conservation, which is a path out of despair and into hope.
Find a link to Hank Lentfer's book, Faith of Cranes, on our website, birdnote.org.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, December 4th, 2017, about 18 minutes past the top of the hour. Joining me now in the studio, a great friend back in town, Harrison B. Good to have you in Studio A.
Good to be here, man. How you doing?
I am good. Harrison, I was trying to think, if people don't know you, take us back a little bit, your history in Juneau, because you have roots here for sure.
You know, I definitely do, and basically what it boils down to is I left Tennessee, which is where I'm from. This was pretty much after I got done with school, the first place I came, and really fell in love with the places just on a personal level. And then, got more deeper into pursuing music, and as that kind of developed, I always maintained a relationship here, starting out at the university, all the way to downtown on Franklin Street and all the places you can go to hear music there. And, you know, it's just been something I've made it a point to try and keep in touch with and come back to, because there's just so many people here that I go so far back with, I don't think I'll ever not be able to pop into this place.
All right. And listeners, Harrison's going to be playing this Wednesday at KRNN Spotlight Concert Series at the Gold Town Theater at 7 p.m. And you're going to be doing acoustic holiday songs.
I am. I'm going to be doing a couple of things, and a lot of what's been going on this fall is some writing, which I definitely am excited about, and it's definitely time to begin pushing these songs out into the world a little bit, and I think the first stage of that is just showing them to some people, and I feel more intimate in terms of a player-listener relationship here in Juneau than anywhere else. So I'm excited to show these songs to people who have been listening to me play this guitar, for 5 years or more, and they're going to know.
How would you explain your style to someone who hasn't heard you before?
I was thinking the other day, I still haven't really found myself in a genre, and then the question becomes what it is that you're trying to do. And I think ultimately, what I'd like to see over the course of a career, however big or small it is that personally I am driven to be eclectic and maintain eclecticism as part of what it is that I do and find a way to always bring it back to a place that, you've come to expect it to come from, but to never, become finite in where I find my sources.
Good answer. <Yeah. laughs>
Sorry that got long-winded, but that's how I feel.
Oh, where do you start the search for that one, would you say?
Oh, probably internally inside the band. I feel a lot of times the hippest ears are the ones closest to you, and so James Rosales and Cole Paramore, they're always putting me on stuff, And then from there, I'm a big playlist guy, so I like to get on and a station like Pandora, which I'm excited to announce that we just got to be a part of, it's about finding new artists. So you go on there and you type in somebody you like and they just keep suggesting people you never heard before. And I always pick up something from somebody. It could be any genre, but you get that little nugget in a song and that's going to be cool anywhere you put it. And so you pile all those together.
Who would you be honored to, somebody put in someone's name and then you played next? Oh, who do you want that to be?
I feel like that's equally as broad, but I'd say, at this point with current artists that I really do got a lot of respect for, I'd say Gary Clark Jr. number one, Portugal the Man number two. Those are two people that I see that are kind of pursuing their own avenue and they're bringing some new sounds in, but definitely staying true to, what it is that they do at the same time.
All right.
Yeah.
So you said you've been writing this fall.
Hmm.
What inspires you as you write? What do your songs focus around?
Sure. Writing for me these days is different than it's been in the past. But I think right now where I'm at is, being able to focus on ideas outside of maybe what it is you deal with in the moment to moment and, thinking about bigger picture ideas and then melodically letting these things just kind of come as they may. And realistically, the way I write is I have my phone, I'm driving down the road, on the ranch, on a horse, I'm taking a walk in the woods, wherever I'm most quiet, generally speaking. I'll hear it. I'll hear the hook. It'll just come. I'll sing it into my phone, and it may sit there for a month. It may sit there for 2 months. But eventually I come back to it, and I'll stack these little pieces together like Legos, and eventually I have, a skeleton. And from there I know the gaps that I need to fill in, and then I set it down for a week, and then I reappraise and say, is this yes or no the thing you want it to be? And if not, just continue to revise those there.
Okay, thinking about Wednesday night show, acoustic holiday songs, but mm-hmm. Were you hinting that maybe we'll get some of this new material as well that may not be holiday-y?
That's correct. I think you're going to get a little taste of each, and that's what I've kind of tried to frame the event as being. I'm going to share a couple of those songs, and then most definitely I've opened it up to where people, if you buy a pre-sale ticket, which you can find at krnn.org, what you can do is you can suggest a holiday song that you might like to hear. And, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. That'd be pretty good at this point. But I had a lot of good suggestions, and it's an eclectic mix of tunes, that I'm working with. It's been a lot of fun to dig through them, to be honest. It really has.
Right on. And, let's see, doors open at 6:30, right?
Mm-hmm, that's
and,
correct.
And you're going to start at 7?
That's it.
Okay. You going to take an intermission? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think we're going straight through.
Okay.
Yeah, start to finish. It'll be one set.
All right.
Yeah, man.
Harrison B., it's great to have you in the studio, as always. We're going to go out with Father Help Me. What should we listen for in this tune?
Oh, maybe the, this is not an acoustic song, but what you should listen for is the fact that that is the root of this song. And so when you hear it, just realize this could easily be a dude and a guitar.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
It's good to be here. It's good to see you, my man. And always good to be in Juneau.
All right. We'll see you Wednesday night at the Goldtown, 7 p.m. Harrison B. Tickets at krnn.org.
I know. for commonplace, and ain't got time for his up on the lizard. Contemplation of Asia. I'll be on that spaceship. You come around with me, I sit in the home until you're station. Earth, sometimes I wonder what kind of bed did I be laid in. Just what kind of scene have I been dressed up here to play in. But still, I must gravitate to the appreciation.
Support comes from the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping to reach educational savings goals. Save in Alaska. Study anywhere. Information at uacollegesavings.com.
KTOO is gearing up to launch the on-air portion of our winter member drive on December 5th. But you can get a head start on your giving and have a chance to win one of three Eagle Crest season passes. You are automatically entered to win by making your donation now at ktoo.org, or you can also enter without a donation. This opportunity ends at 5 p.m. Monday, December 4th. Make your contribution now and enter for your chance to win an Eagle Crest season pass at ktoo.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 4th. Scott Burton, your host today. We're right at the bottom of the hour. And in the studio now is Deputy Chief David Campbell. Sir, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, here we are with our monthly JPD check-in. What's on your radar, sir?
A lot of stuff, actually. Chief Mercer went to Anchorage today to go to the Executive Development Conference. He and I have been kind of like ships passing in the night for the past couple of weeks. He was gone on a hunting trip for about a week and a half, and then it was Thanksgiving, and then last week I went to Anchorage for a conference, or for a meeting, I should say. Now this week he's gone. So we're talking a lot by phone and by emails, but trying to move things forward with the department.
Okay. Let's see. We just had Gallery Walk downtown on Friday. I understand you did a few road closures. How did all that go?
Yeah, the reports I'm hearing today is that it went well. The people seem to be in a good mood. We had the CSOs had some of the roads blocked down right there on Front Street, and our walking beat officer was out making the rounds and being visible. And I didn't go. I had a prior commitment that night, but from what I'm hearing, it sounded like it was a pretty good time.
And then we have the governor's house reception coming up soon, right?
That is tomorrow night.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have two CSOs that are going to be working the governor's mansion. If you've never gone, I would recommend that you go. I did it 1 year, and my wife wanted to go take the kids, and I was like, well, I've met the governor a few times. But you know what? Going to the house and walking through it and having a cookie, it was definitely a fun time. And if you haven't done it, at least try it once.
Okay. What else is going on?
Well, we're actively recruiting. Next week we have our local testing going on, and that's where a person can come into the police department and take all of the original batteries of tests to kind of get the ball rolling. We have our aptitude test that you take online. We're going to be doing the physical strength and agility test. We're going to be starting the paperwork for the backgrounds, going through oral boards. It's 3 solid days of testing in order to get that next batch of officers in the queue.
I know I've asked you this before. What kind of person do you see being the most successful kind of police officer?
The most successful policeman is someone that can definitely multitask. And the thing about what drew me to the job was I was a college student. I didn't know what I wanted to do as an adult. And I took a justice class, and I was really drawn to the fact that there are so many different things that you have to do as a police officer, and you have to do them well. And if you don't, you know, if you can't communicate well with people or, you know, control a violent situation or write a good report, if you can't do those type of things, it really prevents you from being a successful police officer. So it was the everyday is different kind of aspect. And I have asthma, so I can't join the military. And being part of something that was kind of bigger than myself, and when I look back at my life, being able to say, wow, I made a difference or I helped out, you know, the community, that was really, really important to me. So a desire to serve and to have every day be different and to really kind of push yourself. You'll never be pushed as thoroughly as if you become a police officer, because if you think you got your stuff together, well, that's when life is going to tell you, well, maybe you don't.
And you've told me before it's a lifestyle choice, right?
It is a lifestyle choice, yeah. It's not a Monday through Friday, you know, 8 to 5 kind of a job. We're going to have weekends and nights off. And that actually appealed to me. I became a police officer when I had a very, very young family. But I worked a non-traditional job as a telephone operator, and I kind of liked that, working in the nights, working on the weekends kind of thing. So it's a lifestyle choice. And then I tell people, if you're interested in becoming a police officer, it's really a two-question conversation or two-question, you know, whatever you want to call it. The first question is, do you want to be a police officer in general? The next question is, well, where do you want to be a police officer? Because every agency is different. If you work in the border as an ICE agent or a state trooper or a federal, you know, FBI agent or a local municipal police officer, they're all police officers, but what they experience is different. And for me, I was really drawn to municipal police work because my wife is a military brat, and she didn't want us moving around every couple of years, wanted our kids to have some consistency. And when I looked around, Juneau was a very interesting place because it's small enough to where one person can really make a difference, and you can really be exposed to some cool things as a police officer. A friend of mine worked at a smaller community on the Kenai Peninsula, and he said that he would literally go days without a call for service, just driving in circles, just hoping for something to happen. Well, that's not going to happen in Juneau. I mean, you're going to be pretty much busy, but not, you know, to the point where you are in a bigger city like in Anchorage or Seattle, where it's just call to call to call to call. I mean, we do have days like that, but by and large, you know, you have busy days, you have slower times, and given our geographic isolation, there are things that you can be exposed to in Juneau that you would never think you'd be exposed to in other agencies because of our size. Most agencies that are the midterm agencies, you know, 50 officers or whatever, have memorandums of agreement with their neighbors so that they can use share resources. You know, like if you're in the Dallas Metroplex and you're working for Addison PD and something bad happens, you're probably going to call Dallas and say, hey, can your SWAT team come? You know, we don't have that luxury here because our big neighbors, Seattle and Anchorage, are just too far away. So for an agency our size, we have SWAT teams, and we have crisis negotiators and hostage negotiators and bomb techs. And, you know, the list just goes on and on about what people can experience. You know, we've got drug cops. We've got people crime cops. We have school officers. We have people that work out at the airport. So you can have this small town feel, but really have this dynamic career that really can take you in a lot of different directions. I've been very blessed in that in the 22 and a half years I've been with the police department, I usually spend about 3 years doing something, and they rotate me to do something else. So you're always on that learning curve. So I've never gotten to the point where it's been like a drudgery and where I didn't want to come to work. And it's just been fun and just very rewarding. And I would definitely encourage anybody out there in my voice, if you're interested, definitely look us up, because Juneau's a really special place to work.
What would you say is the most challenging part of your job, or has it been through your career?
Sometimes, you know, dealing with human nature can be kind of hard, because it's, I have some friends of mine who, you know, will live in Juneau, and they don't associate with like the criminal element, and they're not exposed to things, and they think Juneau is this little crime-free utopia, and it's not. You know, bad things happen in Juneau. There are bad people that live here. And probably the most difficult time for me was when I was supervising the investigations unit. And the vast majority of the cases that we were dealing with were either sexual assaults or sexual assaults against children. And it was really difficult because my children at that time were in elementary school. And I found it hard to go to big gatherings and look around and think to myself, wow, you know, some of these people here might be here for the wrong reason. And at that point in time, I knew it was time for me after 4 years to leave the unit, because you can only take so much of that before it's time to move on. But that was definitely the most difficult thing to deal with, was just understanding what some people can actually do to other people.
And the flip side of that, what's the most fulfilling for you?
The most fulfilling to me is when you talk to someone who is having a really bad day, maybe they've been a crime victim, and you're actually able to help them. I didn't get in this job to arrest people, take them to jail. But, you know, if someone is, let's say, the victim of a burglary, you know, can you give the people the skills and the tools so that they would be less likely to be victimized in the future, or, you know, recover their property or arrest the person that did do that? So being able to help people to get through whatever happened to them and move forward is definitely the most rewarding.
Okay. Switching gears a little bit, I understand that cameras on officer cameras are still evolving. Tell us about where you are with those.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, body-worn cameras, we rolled them out about I think it was like 2.5 months ago. We started with two cameras. The hard part about the cameras is really the infrastructure. You know, making sure that the department is set up in such a way to where the videos can be downloaded and stored and make it kind of an easy situation for the officers, and then figure out, you know, everything that goes along with it from a policy point of view. From the officer's perspective, I mean, we give them all audio recorders anyway. And when I worked the field, it was second nature to me to hit the button and record almost everything I did. So from the officer's perspective, hitting a button and now being able to record the video, it's just something they're already used to, but just with the added component of the video to it. So we rolled out two. We now have five in the field, and we're making sure that the systems that we have in place in the department are robust enough to handle them, and then we're going to be unveiling them until hopefully every officer that's in uniform out there the street will have one and will be working.
Speak to that a little bit. You know, having everything you do recorded, can't that be stressful?
It can be, but it's not everything. I mean, the officers have to activate a button. They have to actually activate the recorders. It's not like if, you know, they're working a 12-hour shift and every single thing is going on, because, well, what happens if you go to the bathroom? You don't want that recorded, you know, type of thing. So it's definitely something that they have to activate manually themselves. But I always felt that, you know, when I knew that what I was doing was being audio recorded, and I knew that, you know, gee, I'm not just talking to this person, whoever I'm talking to, but I'm also talking to anyone that might be listening to this recorder. And we train our officers to think that way, right? You know, you never know who's going to listen to it. Is your supervisor going to listen to it? Is a judge or a jury or a prosecutor or the chief going to listen to it? So I think that if you go around thinking that what you're doing is being recorded, you're probably going to be behaving yourself in that situation.
Okay. If people want to find out more about recruitment or becoming involved with the police department, where's the best place to start?
The best place to start would be to go on to our website, JuneauPolice.com. We have a little button that says, you know, come work for us, or, you know, we're hiring someone on that line. You click on it, and I'll walk you through the steps. We are hiring lateral officers. Can come in and just go through the field training process and then hit the street. We're also hiring new officers, entry-level officers that would have to go to the Public Safety Academy in Sitka. If someone is interested, though, I think that you can read, you can watch TV, but until you actually do the job, you never really know. The turning point for me, I was a college student. I was a justice major. I wasn't sure if I was going to become an attorney or a police officer. And then one of the classes, my instructor was a sergeant in charge of the homicide division for Anchorage, Sergeant Grimes. And he set me up on a ride-along. And I went on the ride-along, and by the time the shift was over, I was like, oh, I'm not going to be an attorney. I have to be a police officer because I had just so much fun. So we do have a ride-along program at the police department. You do have to fill out a form and complete a very, very short background because we can't have people of the criminal milieu coming in and learning our stuff from us. But the form is also available online. It takes about 5 days for the clerk in order to process the form. And then I say, go on a ride-along, interact with an officer, see firsthand what they do, and see if it might be something for you.
All right, sir. Deputy Chief David Campbell here in the studio. Thank you for coming on the show with our weekly JPD update. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I know other radio stations do, so I'll just say happy birthday to my son, Tyler. He's 25 years old today.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
KTOO is supported by listeners like you and by Breezin, carrying fresh baked pastries to pick up for visitors during the holidays. Chef Moorhead offers seasonal menu choices for takeout and catering for special events and holiday parties. More information at breezin.com.
Hey, only a few tickets left for December's art classes, the Not Your Typical Wine and Paint Night, presenting Paper Garden with local artist Lorelei Miko on Thursday, December 14th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Rockwell. Prepare to use paper as both a creative and flexible material and leave with a mini mason jar bouquet. All supplies included, no host bar. Tickets on sale now at KTOO, The Jack, and JAHC.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 4th, about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Joanne Flora. She's the Fund Development Director at REACH. Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Hi, how are you today?
It's nice to have you here on the show. If people don't know what REACH does, Joanne, how would you describe that to them?
REACH is an organization that serves developmentally and intellectually disabled individuals. These are people who are going to be living with their disabilities pretty much their entire lives. It's not like you had an accident, became disabled, and you recover. We often will be serving people directly from infancy through their entire adult life.
And you were telling me before we went on the air that you serve almost 400 people?
In seven Southeast communities, we have approximately 400 individuals that we serve with a staff of almost 300 people.
What would you say is sort of the quintessential REACH job? Is it like a direct service provider, or what's an example our listeners might be able to relate to us?
You know, that's an interesting question because we are a very broadly based organization. We have enterprises that operate businesses like the Shredding. We have REACH Shredding, right? We have the 9th Street Cafe in the Federal Building. We have the Canvas Art Studio and Gallery. But if you're boiling it down to the nuts and bolts, I have to say it's the direct service professionals, the people doing the day-to-day, one-to-one work with the folks that we serve.
And you have almost 300 employees overall. That right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So what's on your radar right now with REACH?
Well, the first thing I'd like to do is I just want to give a shout-out to everybody who participated in Giving Tuesday with a donation to REACH. We really appreciate you. That was the first time we've done Giving Tuesday. And so, you know, the first time you do anything, you get a little bit kind of squirrely and uneasy going, oh, I hope this works. I hope I can make it happen, right? We had a nice response, and we're very pleased. So thank you, everybody who donated. However, the year is not yet over. And that brings me to our end-of-year drive. What, you know, Scott, what a lot of folks don't realize is that December, almost all – back up, Joanne. A third of most donations to nonprofits occur in December, with the 30th and 31st being the biggest days of the year for donations. Why is that, you ask? Well, I'll tell you. Because we wait to the last stinking minute to get everything in for our taxes, right? I mean, true?
Mm.
Right. So we're looking ahead now with our end-of-year drive, just letting people be aware that the door is always open at REACH. If you still need to make that donation or you'd like to make a little bit more of a donation for 2017 tax year, you can do it this month, and you can do it with REACH. You can either do it by walking into the building or you can go to reachak.org and click the little giving icon. But this is going to be a really big month for all charitable donations, and the last 2 days of the year is the Last Chance Saloon.
I'm not sure everybody knows that you're a nonprofit, but you are indeed one, right?
We are, in fact, a nonprofit, and we've been at this for just coming up on 40 years, and a lot of folks don't realize that either, because a lot of how we have sustained ourselves over the years has been through things like Medicaid funding. We serve a high population of very low-income people. Also, Social Security disability insurance, obviously. So, and other kinds of medical billings and insurances. But, you know, the times, they are changing, and the climate is changing on how these types of services will be funded in the future. So rather than sit around and wring our hands and wait and see what happens, we're just moving into a more active fundraising model because we are a nonprofit and we are a charitable organization, and we're working now really to get the word out into the community.
Okay, if somebody wants to give, how can they do that?
Well, they can go to reachak.org. There's a giving link there, and I think the little donate button appears on every page. That would be fine. They can also call the office or stop by the office on 3rd and Seward. And, you know, if you, I'm just looking out your window now, Scott. You see it's getting dark? If you haven't been up to the Reach building yet, don't wait too long because we've done our Christmas window. And we do a Christmas window that looks like Macy's. And it is fantastic. So grab your kids and your friends and head on up to 3rd and Seward. We have animations and music and things that move. It's a very exciting window. We'd love to have you come by and see the artistic things that go on with Reach.
All right. That's the voice of Joanne Flora. She is the Fund Development Director at Reach. It's nice to have you on the show. And what else?
One more thing. Starting now as part of our year-end campaign, Scott, I just want to let people know we're kicking off our raffle. Now, as we move into our 40th year, we're going to be having a 40th anniversary celebration in April. We'll have more about that later. But now we're starting the raffle, which will be drawn during that event. We're giving away two airline tickets thanks to Alaska Airlines. We have see if I can do this without getting tongue-tied. We are doing a canoe paddle and trek from Above and Beyond Alaska and whale watching for two. So tickets are going to be $10 each or six for $50. And this is a great time to buy raffle tickets because they make cool stocking stuffers. And they also make nice little hostess gifts when you go to parties. So remember Reach, both the Canvas gift shop and art gallery, and also the raffle tickets. This is a good time to kick this raffle off, and we'll have more about our anniversary celebration as we get closer to April.
Joanne, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Scott, thank you. Always good to be here.
All right. Listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, December 4th, about 8 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Megan Chambers and Ben Brown over from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and we're here to talk about naughty or nice wine tasting. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Yeah. Naughty or nice, how'd this party come to be anyway?
I am struggling to remember its exact origin. I think it was one of those crazy ideas that we schemed up at a staff meeting. And, you know, I think ultimately it replaced Jackpot.
Right. I think that was it. Jackpot was wonderful,
yeah,
and fun, and but for the days of putting it up and taking it down was a little too labor-intensive.
Exactly. It was always during the holiday party season. You know, the Jack gets rented out a lot. Anyway, so we decided to do a wine tasting, and we call it the Naughty or Nice Party, and people get elf names, and they do different activities, and we have live music every year. We kind of moved away from it the last few years, and now we're back to our roots with wine tasting because, let's be honest, that's what we all need during
right.
the holidays.
It'll warm people up on a Friday, and the Flustered Cluckers are going to be playing.
Yep. They're awesome. Sophie always pulls out some really great holiday tunes.
No, it should be really fun, and it. I think people maybe get a little fatigued sometimes because there's so much fun stuff going on. This is a pretty low-key event. You don't even have to putt anymore. We've taken, like, the one athletic thing away. Now it's basically lifting a glass. There'll be special limited edition glasses on sale, but there'll be ones you can just use for the wine tasting.
Yep. Yeah, we have a really nice stash of Riedel stemware,
uh-huh.
Very nice glassware, so you can purchase those if you want, or you can just use our usual stuff. And there's going to be a spin-to-win wheel with
yes.
prizes.
Fabulous prizes from our friends from all over downtown. And that's just part of being there. All you have to do is just be there, and someone could call your name and say, you've won a prize, you naughty little elf, you.
So, Ben, it's interesting to hear your voice on behalf of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Remind us about your new position.
Yes, I started today as the Marketing and Development Specialist. So I'm working with Megan and Nancy and all the other wonderful people over there, and it's just really great to be there. There's a lot going on. I knew that. You know, I'm a recovering JAHC board member from about 16, 17 years ago when Sybil Davis was our executive director. And we were in a tiny little basement over in North Franklin Street. So it's amazing to see how far the organization has come, and I'm also excited about how far we can go.
Yeah, absolutely. And the new house that's going to be going up
soon. Yes, with some beautiful architectural renderings, if anyone's curious what the new Jack's going to look like, and some really fun pins. And we would love some signatures for online statements of support if you guys are wandering through the Jack for Naughty or Nice, or we've got some holiday gift wrap going on right now, too. So, and our lobby shop is fully stocked on good holiday items. So many reasons to come down, but especially Friday.
Well, it's going to be from Friday from
5:30 to 7:30.
So it is an early event. So if you wanted to go, you know, catch a movie later or go out to dinner or something, you can have a cram-packed Friday evening. And we're going to have live music. There's going to be a wine tasting, and there'll be fabulous prizes and a good time for all. So come and be a naughty elf or a nice elf with us at the Juno Arts and Culture Center.
That's Ben Brown and Megan Chambers here in the studio. Thanks for coming on the show, you two.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Shelley Delaney is going to be your host, and she'll get an update on library activities, find out about the holiday cream tea at the Church of the Trinity. Mike Blackwell and Katrina Wolford will be here to highlight the Juno Douglas City Museum, and we'll find out more about the charter school. Taking a look at the weather here, it's currently 41 degrees here in the capital city. And the forecast for tonight calls for showers likely mainly before 9 a.m. Tomorrow, Tuesday, calls for rain, patchy fog before 3 p.m., high around 41. On Wednesday, rain is also likely mainly before noon, and then partly sunny. Thursday calls for mostly sunny skies with a high near 44. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Steering.